All right, the recording has started. I'm also going to text Daryl. And apparently,
So this is the Green Party Steering Committee for February 25th. Starting the call. Charles Shrouse facilitating. The roll call. I guess I'll start with that. Darlene?
I'm here. Sorry, I was on mute.
Thank you. Tama?
Not on the steering committee.
She's not in the steering committee. Sorry.
No.
Hillary, do you know the members?
Yeah, so...
Go ahead.
Gloria?
Present.
Andrea?
Here.
Myself, Hillary Kane, as treasurer, is here. And I believe there is no other steering committee member on the call currently. Is that correct? And then I believe it's just Charles, you as the facilitator, and Tama as an observer.
Thank you. So we've already begun the recording. There was one addition to the agenda suggested, which is an endorsement for the March for Our Lives. That will be under new business. Any other changes or additions to the agenda? Any objections to adding that? And so I think we're one short on quorum, but we can start into discussions, and hopefully we'll have somebody join us. A couple have called that they weren't able to get on this evening, or emailed. So the new business, March for Our Lives, do you want to present that, Hillary?
Sure. I think it was actually Gloria that sent it to the list. To be honest, the little I know is that it is Sherry's latest march, happening, I believe, in June of this summer, going from Philly to D.C. Somebody else jump in if they know anything more than I do. The specific ask, I think, is just generally around, anti-poverty relief and Sherry's typical agenda. So I really don't have much more than that, but it seems like a no-brainer that we should endorse and see whatever else we can do to support. And I'm sure the Philly and Pennsylvania Greens will be, and New Jersey, because they're usually involved as well.
Gloria Stack.
Go ahead, Gloria.
Well, we don't have quorum at the moment, so my suggestion would be we not take this up now because we can't vote on it. But maybe if somebody joins us late, we can. Or am I confusing things?
Andrea.
Go ahead, Andrea.
So under these circumstances, what we can do is make recommendations for action. So what we should just say here is that we're going to refer this to an online vote, and let's just send it there. I'm excited to see this, and I'd be glad to vote yes on it when it does that. So we can just do that.
Hillary, oh, Jack.
Go ahead, Hillary.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, I think also because it's not until June, like we could also just table this for 2 weeks. But
Darlene Stack.
The online vote is fine as well.
Darlene.
So my understanding also that this march has a Puerto Rico aid theme this year, so I'd like for the SC to consider that.
Good.
Can we see around?
I will leave this to come back to if we add another person to the call, but refer it to an online vote if we don't reach quorum. Is that acceptable?
Yes.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks, Charles.
So standing business. Treasurer's report, Hillary.
Okay, so I'm pulling up the bank account info right now. I don't think I've forwarded it yet to the steering committee because I sent it first to FinCom to get their eyeballs on it. But I finally went through and pulled numbers for what I believe is an accurate representation of all the caucus and committee funds. And so I created a big spreadsheet, which I'm happy to share with anyone, that had whatever the legacy numbers were that I inherited, I think from Jeff, basically, which to the best of my knowledge represents like 2016 amounts. So like, you know, it would have said, the Black Caucus started with, let's say, $320. And I'm just making that number up off the top of my head. I went through for each caucus and committee and pulled all the 2017 and 2016 donations, entered that in, subtracted the 10% overhead that we charge to, that we basically take as like a processing fee for GPUS for administration, and then subtracted any of the 2017 expenses that I handled or that are known, and came up with the final amount, and then plus the $60,000 that we normally keep in reserves, and that came up to, let me pull it up, it came up to an amount of money that was much more than what we had in our reserves. I think it was something like $89,000 when we previously had $74,000 in reserves. So I moved all the money that was necessary into reserves from our checking account into our savings account to make good on that. That I did not yet move the additional $18,000 that I'm supposed to move based on the previous decision of this body, mostly because I just wanted us to talk about it one more time. Right now we have $111,000 in the bank total, 89 of which is in reserves, and then the remaining 23,000, just under 23,000, is in our checking accounts. So if I move the 18, which I can and should, we'll have about $3,000, $5,000 left over, which it would not be enough to make payroll come March 7th. So I just want people to realize that that is what could happen and should happen, and by that point we would then need to go in, our fiscal policy would kick in. Now granted, meeting payroll at the current rate, which is another conversation, and hopefully it won't be at the current rate, but it might be close to exactly what we need depending on what we wind up with. Long story short, if I move the money from the Jill 2016 payment, then we will have to start to implement, I guess, our sort of emergency fiscal policy of really limiting expenditures to only the most necessary. So I put this up for discussion about 2 weeks ago. There's really no reason I shouldn't move that money and kick us into this, the fiscal restraint, unless, of course, we decide to override a previous decision.
Andrea, tech.
Go ahead, Andrea.
Is this a good place to ask Hillary?
To ask what?
Whatever I want to ask.
Yeah. Like, I'm done. Like, that was the important part of the treasurer's report. I don't have anything else going on right now.
So what constitutes you must pay, like, rent, utilities, payroll, insurance,
right?
Something.
I mean, it's hard for me. Like, I don't really have that in that type of format. I mean, hold on, let me open. And this is at current salary, right? Which might change. Everything's sort of in different places. I don't have like a sort of standard month here, but let's see. In December, we spent $16,000 on payroll, just on payroll, taxes and processing. So even if that was cut in half, we would still be at $8,000, which I don't know that it's getting cut that dramatically. And then rent I already paid for March. you know, we have like $50 for the phone. I mean, there's a couple, there's, I'm trying to think of what's like a standard payment. I mean, we obviously have like PayPal fees and whatnot, and they're variable, but they run a couple hundred, $300 a month on average. Actually, I'll make that more like $1,200 a month for between PayFlow and PayPal together. So those are sort of the big monthlies.
Andrea Sack.
Go ahead, Andrea.
And so the payroll on March 7th is going to be half of it full salary and then the other half salary, right?
Well, no, actually, the payroll on March 7th technically covers the period of February 16th to February 28th.
Okay.
And so if we implement whatever we implement on March 1st, technically that payroll is not affected because it's the previous half month.
Got it.
So no matter what, we're kind of getting into that zone anyway, whether I move that 18 grand or not, because if there's right now 23, and so I guess, yeah, so the entire month's payroll was 16, so half of that is like 8, right? So, you know, 8,000 is going to go out. And fundraising income, I mean, I don't have that, and we can obviously have the fundraising report, is not robust right now. I mean, I feel like there's a traditional sort of downturn at the beginning of the year, and we might be seeing that. So,
glorious,
I mean, like, Zach. I mean, the other thing I just want to, like, we do have the money, right? Like, this is why we have reserves, but we essentially are going to start dipping into reserves, which is not a good place to be.
Gloria?
Yeah, I mean, it seems that, right, whether that act money actually moves to reserve or not, it is really earmarked as reserve money. And so it seems to me we might as well just do what we're supposed to do and be in a situation where we can only pay for what we have to pay for. Now, then the question would be, if we have to go into the reserve, I mean, then we trigger whatever mechanism requires that to happen. It doesn't seem to make sense to me to just keep the reserve money not in the reserve. I mean, it's going to have to be either relied upon, which is not a great situation for essentials, or not. Okay.
Who just joined us?
This is Mike.
Welcome.
Hey, Mike.
Quorum!
Yes, we have quorum. Yay. Hillary Stack?
Go ahead, Hillary.
So I think what I hear Gloria saying is, and to be honest, it doesn't matter if I physically move it or not. I mean, it splits on a screen. Right. Like, I can move it back and forth every day. To essentially, regardless of whether the money is physically in the reserves or not, but notate and track it as if it was in reserves, which then would, in short order, trigger the fiscal restraint is what I'm going to call it. I don't know if there's an actual term. The fiscal restraint part of our fiscal policy, where we are severely limited, and I'm pulling it up now just so that we're actually all familiar with what it is. So, Mike, just to catch you up, I went through and did all the committees and caucuses, as you know, and moved a bunch of money into reserves because I needed to, and we are getting thin on funds, $23,000, and I didn't yet do the Jill money, which is $18,000, which would leave us with about $5,000 in the bank. And regardless of whatever staff resolution happens by March 1st, if that happens, payroll for March 7th would still be based on February work, which would be approximately $8,000.
Thank you.
Is there anything else on the treasurer's report?
Sorry, I'm trying to think if there's any other major thing. January SEC report was filed on time. It stayed in our standing committee folder drive. A couple amendments were done. I think that's about it.
And this also says treasurer's report to the GNC. Is there anything separate for that?
Tama promised me that she would have it. I'm still learning how to do income reports because there's so many different pieces, and I thought I had figured it out and clearly didn't. And so she is sending me income for December and January this evening, and then I truly will actually learn how to do this on my own in the next couple of weeks.
I thought you had December.
Mm.
I did December.
I will look for it in my email.
You just couldn't go back and check it because I didn't import it back into Nation Builder. You have to
maybe.
Trust.
I don't know. I'll look in my email. I don't feel like I didn't know that I had it, but maybe I did.
Okay,
I'll check.
I'll check too. I'll work on it later tonight. It doesn't take me very long, so.
Yeah. I mean, if you emailed to me, my Gmail will tell me.
Okay.
And are there any other comments on the treasurer report?
Andrea Stack.
Go ahead, Andrea.
So, Hillary, it sounds like you want a decision or something from us about whether to move the 18,000 or not.
Yeah, I mean, it occurred to me, like, if I had my druthers, I would reverse that decision because, you know, while at the time when we were flush, it made sense to put that money into reserve, like, now we kind of need the money. But I understand, you know, other people feel that that's bad policy because, you know, when we get extra windfalls, like, you know, like bequests and other unexpected money, like, we should just automatically put it in reserves and try to keep our spending to our income. You know, I mean, I think there's two schools of thought. So I think that, I mean, but at the same time, I think Gloria's point, and, you know, when I'm looking at the numbers, like, we might be heading into fiscal restraint anyway. And so whether we do it now or whether we do it, like, in a month and a half, I'm not sure that it matters greatly. But it is, you know, I think there is also a value in announcing to the party and declaring what is going on and, you know, just giving people that sobering reality check. And it might be helpful with all of our, you know, other budget and union stuff to just sort of like underscore, you know, that we're not being flipped with people's salaries and lives, that this is real.
So, Andrea Stack.
Go ahead, Andrea.
So, assuming that the rules don't crucify us for not moving the money to reserve, maybe we ought to just seek consensus about leaving it where it is. Over.
Hillary Stack.
Ahead,
I guess
Hillary.
I'm not – so, like, where the money physically sits is sort of irrelevant. I guess the question is, are we considering it to be in reserve and therefore having a restrained fiscal, you know, going into that fiscal restraint or not? Like, that's the question. Like, my question is not whether we move the money. My question is, are we standing by the previous decision of this body to move that money or are we not? Because even if we say yes, let's move it, I'm then gonna physically have to move it back in order to actually pay bills. But we will be, because I mean the reserve is there to dip into it, but you're in that restrained condition. So like where the money is sort of not the point. It's whether we're like abiding by that previous decision and going into restraint pretty much now or in a couple of weeks, or are we reversing that decision and not yet going into restraint?
Direct response.
Go ahead.
I guess for my part, I mean, I think we should abide by the decision. We are in crisis right now financially, and not abiding by our previous decision kind of sugarcoats. Excuse me.
Got it. Totally agree.
Darlene Stack?
Thank you. Darlene.
My preference would be that we go into financial restraint before we use the money so that we can justify our actions. I think that we're getting significant lashback right now from the NC. There's these insinuations that things are not being handled effectively. And so I would prefer, again, that we go into financial restraint. But I think there's also something to be said, to your point, Hillary, that we start providing some reports. I don't want to bring up the SOAR issue or email, but the point of Holly Hart that she says, I want to see the data. Well, let's start showing them the data. You know, if that's as far as she wants to go, then let's start proving the point of that we're having fundraising issues, that there's staffing issues, whatever the case may be, so that we can begin to justify our actions. Over.
Daryl Stack.
Go ahead, Daryl.
I was just letting you all know I'm here. I apologize for being late. I was in another meeting that went over. I was doing too much thinking that I could be done before this call, so I apologize.
Just to let you know where we are, Hillary did the treasurer's report. When she moves the $16,000 from Jill Stein campaign and pays bills at the beginning of March, we'll likely go into fiscal restraint, and she's confirming that we'll proceed with that.
Cool.
Hillary Stack.
Go ahead, Hillary.
So I pulled up the fiscal policy, and I'm reading a section, and I just want to make sure I understand it. It says, transfers from restricted funds that cumulatively do not exceed $5,000, okay, I think I know what it, or 1% of the current budget, whichever is greater, must be approved by the SC. Transfers that cumulatively exceed that amount in any fiscal year require approval by the NC. So I just want folks to realize that, and this, it is what it is, and we've clearly been here and done this before, that the first $5,000, it sounds like, the SC can approve, like dipping into general funds. So maybe this means restricted funds from, like, if we're having to dip into caucus or committee money. Never mind. Sorry. Okay, never mind. That's only for if we have to actually dip into caucus or committee money, then they have to approve it, and then the SC and the NC have to approve it based on the threshold.
Daryl Speck.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's not the caucus or committee money. I think it is the reserves that we have in the account that we need to be able to function, because I think you have to get the – maybe any money that was restricted that was raised for a particular committee, we can't use for anything other than that legally. And the caucus money is similarly. So I think you'd have to ask the caucuses if you could use their money to do something else. But other than that, the money that we've been setting aside for a need is the money that we'd have to dip into to pay our bills.
Hillary Staff.
Go ahead.
Yeah, correct. The fiscal policy distinguishes between reserve funds and restricted funds. And restricted are caucus and committee money. And so the piece that I was reading that I was kind of worried about with the SC or the NC approving every expenditure was only if we get to the extreme situation where we're having to dip into quote-unquote restricted money versus reserve money, which we're a ways away from. So,
this is Tom. I have a point of information for you if you want.
Go ahead, Tama.
I think the paragraph you're reading from, and I can't pull it up right now, has to do with us having expenditures that are not budgeted expenditures. I didn't think it had anything to do with restricted or reserves or anything. I thought it was non-budgeted expenses that reached, because we had some of those before, and we had to go to the NC for them to do a budget amendment. I could be wrong, but I can't pull it up right now, but I thought I would throw that out there just to let you know.
Hillary Stack.
Go ahead.
So that might be elsewhere in the fiscal policy, and I will admit to not having slept with this under my pillow and fully memorized it, but the section that I'm reading is specifically about borrowing from restricted funds in the event of literally having no other money left.
Okay.
All right. I think we can move on at this point.
Yeah. There's no concerns with maintaining the previous decision. Good. So fundraising report, Mike Dennis.
Wait, sorry, Hillary Stack.
Go ahead, Hillary.
And I'm, just because I'm still a new treasurer, so I'm reading, you know, basically it says when you have to, I'm actually trying to figure out where it says that you're, that anything actually changes. Because it's saying that you have to, you can only spend money, only to pay for operating expenses as defined in Section 8.2. And Section 8.2, it prioritizes our expenses, like payroll and payroll taxes and benefits are number one, then office rent and utilities, then independent contractors, then vendors that are indispensable to operations, then expenditures with a reasonable expectation of a return on investment, and then other budgeted expenditures. So it clearly prioritizes these things, but it doesn't say like that if we go into this restrained fiscal mode that I actually stop paying anything. Like, I mean, I guess if we were literally down to our last dollar and it was, oh, do we pay payroll or do we pay some random budgeted expense, we pay payroll. But I guess I'm not really clear in the short run how this actually limits our spending in any meaningful way.
Go ahead, Daryl.
Yeah, I would say, Hillary, why don't we punt this back over to the Finance Committee because that's their purview to review and to make those recommendations, and we should probably send it there to try to see if we can make sense of the document, and maybe there's some institutional history and awareness there on that committee. And if it is still unclear, then we may need to figure out what we need to do to clarify with a new proposal to the NC to try to get clarity or at least have a discussion about it. Over.
Sounds good.
Okay. Let's move to the fundraising report. Mike?
Yeah, so STAR has been out this week, and as I mentioned to my colleagues earlier today, I have been in pain and sleeping, so I do not have those numbers, but will send an email to Jody to amend that in the minutes. However, Tama is welcome to chime in if she has anything that she would like to add. Over.
Tama?
I was going to try to look up our income for the month, so can you come back to me?
Sure.
I'll try to look up the total income. I will tell you, Hillary, that I have some institutional memory on the, what you were just talking about before, on what you pay when from when I was on the steering committee and we had to decide what to pay. Basically, you don't pay any committee stuff like ballot access and, you know, PCSC and, I don't know, any of those. Basically, that's what you don't pay. You pay stuff for fundraising and stuff for merchandise and that kind of stuff. But I'll try to find the numbers and let you know when I do.
Thank you.
So come back to me.
Okay, I'm going to step back before we go into liaison reports and cover the item from new business. There was a proposal added to the agenda to endorse the March for Our Lives to D.C. with a Puerto Rican theme. If Daryl or Mike need a little bit more background, we can do that. Otherwise, we can go straight to voting.
Nope, I'm good.
I'm good.
Okay. I guess the question is, is there any concern or objection to endorsing that? Hearing none, I forget what the threshold is for consensus if we need a affirmative vote.
Consensus, like I think, is fine.
I support it.
It sounds like we've got consensus. Thanks. And let's go on to liaisons' reports. Animal Rights Committee, Gloria? Oh, we don't have a person for Animal Rights. Gloria, Eco Action Committee. Gloria?
Trying to get off mute. Sorry. Thanks. Yes, we don't have anyone for Animal Rights. the only thing the new about Eco Action is they just recently elected a secretary, Frank Jeffers, and what I think is good is the conversation is starting that this committee really needs to be a committee with the phone call, which has been not regular for Eco Action. So I will be supporting them in that and hopefully participating as much as possible. Pass.
It sounds like we don't have somebody for international or outreach committees. Andrea?
I can give a little brief about IC because I'm okay. On the committee.
Go ahead, Jolly.
So they're in the process of electing their co-chair. It appears that Bahram Zandi is, ahead of that game. They went recently to the FPVA as a delegation. There was some controversies, I think, that occurred over there, and a subsequent complaint followed that was filed by Ahmed Altouni. I think there needs to be some serious consideration by the SC in regards to what our role is a little bit or our purpose, our identified purposes with the Global Greens and FPVA. I guess what I mean by that is that it's not really clear, made clear, I think, to the committee, the international committee. And I'm hearing a lot of controversy is occurring with some of the international green parties that we need to, I think, dialogue a little bit more as a committee as to what some of our positions are. And I would say that's about it right now.
Any questions or let's continue and skip through outreach. And Andrea, could you speak about bylaws? Burp.
Well, sure. I want to add a little bit more about international committees since I'm also a member. So, some of you have seen the email thread that went through about this really unusual situation that just happened at Global Greens, where it was actually a Global Greens conference put together with the British Isles, the Wales, the UK, I think Northern Ireland or something along that nature. And so they wanted to have this session about Trump. And even though they knew that our people were in attendance, they leapfrogged over us and invited somebody, some analyst from the Democratic Party to offer their take. So our people filed a kind of a complaint about it. Since we have that budget shortfall, we're not going to be paying for the next dues. And so I participated in a conference call with both Bahram and Ahmed, with the secretary of, I guess she's the organizing administrative secretary for Global Green. And there really wasn't any resolution from that discussion, just really, but what it seems like is that we need to do better if we're going to continue in that organization as lobbyists and as building communication bridges and that sort of thing like that. And there was an apology of sorts, but because we're not going to be members right now, there's really not much to pursue. So there's that much. The other request that I have on the floor was regarding International Committee. I would like to take on the role of liaison to that committee, even though I'm serving as a member from Colorado right now. So at some point, if we want to visit that here in some capacity in this meeting, since we have quorum, we can do that. I would appreciate it. So now I want to push over to Burp. Oh, boy. Oh my God, the rule committee.
Darlene Stack.
Okay, before we move to Burp, Darlene.
So just a little bit more clarification as well with the international committee thing. There seems to be some controversy or not agreement among the international committee as far as, or some of its members, I would say, as far as the role that we're playing with Mexico. You know, Mexico, my understanding is, has a poor reputation globally as a Green Party and within Mexico as far as it being entrenched with the government there. And so there's some concern about how close of an ally we should be, or should we be holding Mexico accountable for some of their stances that they've made in the past. And, you know, that's a kind of a that's a piece that needs to be aired out within the international committee is what I'm saying. And I think that my understanding is that the delegates went down to the FPVA presenting as a very strong alliance despite some of this controversy that exists. And so my concern, I think, as an SC person who sits on the committee, is that these things are not being ironed out, and there's not these at-length conversations as to what some of our positions are on an international level. Over.
Daryl Stack.
Andrea Stack.
Daryl and Andrea.
Yeah, I hear you, Darlene, but I think that as a member of the committee, that the committee has to do that work. I mean, I don't think they can look to the steering committee to say, tell us what to do, because as soon as we do that, they'll say, you can't tell us what to do. So I think the committee has to review its own bylaws and its mission, and it is supposed to come up with the recommendations to the party on international work and our engagement with the international community. So I think you're right. If they're not having those long conversations, then they need to. That's what they do as a committee. Whether they do it or not is really up to the committee to do it or not. But I think that that's where it has to start, is with them to do that work, because that's why they are the international committee. That's just my perspective about that. Over.
Andrea?
Yeah. So if I'm not mistaken, Darlene, you're still the delegate to the FPVA, right? Okay, anyway, Paul, I'm pretty sure that you are.
Yes, I was on mute. Yes, I am a delegate. I wasn't able to go.
Okay.
I wasn't able to go on December 2nd because I had a civil service exam, and I had no control over when it was scheduled. But, yes, I am. I'm a delegate, but I guess my understanding is that happens every 2 years or something like that.
Yeah, so here's the issue. So Bahram Zandi is running again unopposed for co-chair of the International Committee. There's been some pushback, you know, I'll just name names. There's been some pushback from Mike Feinstein about Bahram's effectiveness. And Mike's critique is not completely off base. And so one of the things that people in the committee are challenging Bahram with, you know, he's going to get reelected unopposed. You know, one or two people, I think, voted none of the above. That's not going to make a difference, right? But he's being challenged with doing more as far as bridge building and these communications and this sort of thing. I have to say that there is a discussion that's starting to burble up with regard to the role that some of our more veteran members of the party are taking. And this is kind of a common thing, where because they have the personal resources to go to these meetings, even though they're not the official democratically elected delegate, they will try to triangulate the discussion. And I mean, one issue that's on the floor right now that's being discussed in the committee is the fact that, well, our delegate to the Global Greens Conference wanted to include language that categorized the Israeli government as an apartheid government. And they got broad support across the board from other delegates from other countries. As you all realize, the world kind of looks at Israel askance, right? Except for the United States. And so what is clear is that Mike Feinstein was lobbying against the American position and kind of was inserting himself even in closed sessions and things of this nature. He does the same thing with FPVA. He's not the only one that does this sort of thing. And so the discussion that's beginning to happen in the IC is, you know, what needs to happen? And how do you get those veteran people who have been involved in a robust fashion before, how do you get them to respect the democratically elected, ratified voices of the delegates, right? So that sort of discipline needs to be dealt with, and it is being dealt with, at least at the forefront of this. And I think that we have a really robust group of delegates in that committee right now. Folks have started to pull together an ad hoc media committee, ad hoc policy committee, this sort of thing like this, so that they could, you know, even try to assist in bringing forth our statements from our party based on various foreign incidents and things like that. And they have been able to contribute in that way. So this is really exciting to see folks trying to take this all by the horn, you know, trying to look legitimate, trying to step up into that role and really represent our platform really well. So that's the good stuff. So if it's okay with everybody, I'd like to punt over to Burke.
Okay. All right.
So another co-chair election. This time David Jerry is running for co-chair of Burke. He's unopposed. There have been all kinds of, you know, quorum problems and voting problems and because they use the electronic voting app for Burke. And there's kind of a little consternation on the list right now because, so this guy is not opposed. Why in the hell are we even messing with the voting app and, you know, and this sort of thing. And poor Charles Ostick, who's the other co-chair who's going to be staying on, Hugh Esco is rolling off, is trying to navigate these issues. And it's a little comical. It's funny to see the rules committee get wrapped up about the rules, but,
Oh, we should have warned you that that's what happened. I didn't warn you.
This is the rules committee is the first committee I served on when I joined the national committee from Colorado.
And it
has never been any different, right? I think we're going to have a new co-chair at the end of the weekend, and everything is going to proceed just fine. So they're going to have to do some tweaks to the voting app. There's some issues with their own internal policies about, you know, what happens if there's no, can we just have consensus on the list, you know, sort of a thing. So they're going to be navigating some of that stuff. So it's, but I love it. I love it. I love it. So over.
Go ahead, Daryl.
Yeah. Sandra, for we needed the chuckle from that committee this season. But I'm glad it looks like it's going to be doing better because it's been always fairly dysfunctional. But you asked an earlier question, and I don't know if we answered it, but I wanted to try to answer some of it. You had asked a question about how do we deal with the more veteran and seasoned members that are sort of inserting themselves against the or outside of the democratically elected representatives, particularly in international things. And I think we're going to have to look at that, and it potentially may be a larger problem if we're not, you know, some of those people you're talking about can go whenever they want to, and they've been going for years. And so if we can't be members officially, I don't think it stops them from going. And if they're the only ones that are there, they're then somehow at least in people's minds representing who we are. And so we may need to do something that clearly states to those committees, to those organizations that we're currently not, we've opted out of membership temporarily or whatever you want to say, and that there is no representation from the U.S. Green Party, so that we're very clear that if they would like a statement from us, we're happy to give them a statement on important issues that are globally, that are global-minded or whatever, but that, and we'll give them that statement if they ask us for it, but there is no one that's representing our party at any of those functions. And that would at least clarify for the powers that be in those places that who should be representing us, which right now will be nobody because we're not being members. That might help, but I don't know. But I think that's a bigger question of getting people to respect that their opinion is not necessarily they need to be put forward as an opinion of the party because they don't get to represent that. And that's, I think, a problem that we have all over the place.
Gloria Sachs.
Over.
I'm going to go ahead and take Gloria, but I just want to state that this has gone beyond the scope of a report and that we should add international committee as an agenda item at a future meeting. But go ahead, Gloria.
Yes, I completely agree, Charles. I was going to say that it's beyond this, but I want to say that what Daryl raises is important enough that we figure out, is this something that is a motion that can come from us or have to go to the NC, and that we should be very clear who represents the party officially and who doesn't, and we should go on record for that. So.
Thank you all.
I have fundraising, a little bit of fundraising stuff.
Okay.
Whenever
you
want. I don't care. I don't care whenever.
Fundraising committee is next, and I think Mike is the liaison, but you're talking about the fundraising report. So let's come back to that after the liaison reports. We've got a couple left. Mike, fundraising committee report.
I'll do it, Mike, if you want, whenever you
He might be
on
mute.
You don't feel good.
I've been on mute. Yeah, go ahead, Thomas.
Whenever. I can do it with our report. With the report. You want me to do it now, the whole thing?
Yeah, the committee report.
It's kind of both. Last month we had $20,208 come in, and I told Hillary I'd have her the actual income report, how that's broken down. So far this month it's only a little over $13,000, but we haven't had a lot go out. We are just, there's nobody to do some of these things. We have been using a volunteer for writing, but we've had to do some rewriting with it. He's good. He'll be good. He just doesn't do a lot of fundraising writing, so we're helping. I think he'll be fine once we can get him going with putting in asks and things like that, because then we just have to go back over it and do it again. So we're going to try to start using some volunteers to do some of the things like send thank you cards, we put out a call to everybody who said that they would volunteer at one point and had them fill out more specific. And so we got people back that said, sure, I'll hand address envelopes, or sure, I'll write e-blasts. Well, Farlene went to some of those people and she's got a few that are working on it, but then she had one that helped. So that helped. I think that's all right now. We have another meeting this week, so.
Thank you. Nothing
Gloria
else to add to that. Go ahead, Gloria.
I'm a bit of a slow writer, although I did do some of that and edited a lot of that for the Spine campaign. So I'm just willing to pitch in temporarily or wherever you think help is needed around eBlast. That means having to join a call or not join a call. I'd rather not join too many calls, but I'm happy. And I know, Tama, I owe you a call for something else, and I will do that.
That wasn't it, yeah. I'm working on trying to work on a direct mail letter that's going to come from the steering committee, so we could use some help on that, Gloria. It's more just pulling it together. We've got ideas. It's just putting ideas on paper, and then I can edit it. So if you want to talk, I can talk to you about the other issue and that at the same time and show you what we've got so far.
Okay, let's email time.
That would be really helpful. That would be really helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm done. Chris, Merchandise Committee? We don't have Chris on the call, so is there anybody else that can speak to merchandise? Andrea, then Hillary.
Let me defer to Hillary.
Okay.
Hillary. No, I was just going to say that we need to make a decision. We had an email thread going. There was a request to purchase more merchandise, which theoretically does make us money in the long run, though we've got sidetracked into the conversation about the fulfillment house. it sounds to me like that is that's not going to get resolved soon. And so I guess the question is, do we then need to approve, maybe not all of it, but some of the requests from MerchCom to buy more stock in the interim, or do we just let it, you know, just be a little out of stock right now until we figure this out? Over.
Andrea, then Daryl.
Yeah, so one of the things that I think we discussed, and I didn't hear any opposition to this, was to put together some sort of criteria for this fulfillment out. Because, again, it sounds like what Israel stumbling block is that they're not necessarily union. And so it sounds like he feels, like, constrained to that. And I think we need to say it's okay to not go strictly union if you can get all these other things instead. And so we probably ought to come up with a list of, you know, like a punch list of things to look for, that so that it could kind of unshackle them a little bit. I will say that I'm opposed right now to restocking. I still don't really feel like I know what's going on with the inventory. I think at this point we need a different set of eyes to actually go in and count what we have, and I don't know who can do that. So I don't want to spend any more money, especially given the situation that we're in, and then possibly, you know, without knowing what the hell we have in the first place. I think that we do need to move forward on a fulfillment house. You know, it does make sense to have merch. Even if we break even, it's great, you know, PR, advertising, whatever, for people to walk around with our stuff on. So we ought to do that. I would like us to, you know, maybe this call is not the place, but maybe we jump start it here and we start cobbling together that punch list for Chris. And let's just say, here's what we want you to look for. Go find somebody that most likely fits all these criteria and then make a recommendation. And let's just freaking run with it, right? So, you know, that's what the game plan that I'd like to do with regard to for merch, and so y'all let me know what you think. Over.
Daryl?
Yeah, I have similar perspectives as Andrea on some of this, although I'm not concerned about Cynthia counting what's there and giving us that update. She's been doing that, and merch hasn't had a problem with that inventory list, so I'm okay with it. But and we're scheduled to get an update on Monday to know what's there from her. So I think we can wait and see what that looks like. But in terms of buying more, I agree. I think that, you know, unless we get a bunch of orders for something, something could be on back order, and we could simply tell somebody it's on back order. But unless they're asking for it immediately for some event that they're having, and maybe we can tell them on the site, if you're looking for a large quantity of something, please call the office before you place your order to make sure that we're able to fulfill that particular request. And that way, they won't order 100 T-shirts and have to be on some of them on back order. But I think from the list that we got, from the most recent list of what was there, there's a little bit of everything. There are very few things that I thought didn't have anything. So I think we could go with leaving it for now while we wait to get that Monday inventory list, and then decide of that list. And we may need to ask MerchCon to prioritize out of all those things in their relationship with fundraising, what are the most important things to get right now, if we can only get part of it right now, and then see how fundraising goes and get the other part later. But I think that right now spending over $5,000 on getting the merchandise in is not as prudent right now given some of the other financial concerns that we have. So I would not want us to spend that money today, but I think we need a bigger picture, a clearer picture of what's there, as Andre is saying. What is there? We'll know that tomorrow, supposedly. Over.
Okay, I don't think there's anything...
Oh, I'm sorry, Daryl Stack.
Go ahead.
I want to answer Andrea's other question. I'm sorry I didn't do that. My issue when we in the labor movement, when we've had to do things like this, there are often times where even in a labor movement, they have to go outside of the movement because there is something doesn't exist for some reason, or it's not in the area where you're at. And one of the things that we go to are small businesses and co-ops that are operating in the same philosophy that we might have, even if they're non-union shops. So a small business might be non-union, but it may be operating on the principles that we want. So we might look at fulfillment shops that are smaller entities or co-ops as priority lists. And then if we don't find anything there, then, you know, we can go to the next list. But I would start there if we're trying to throw out some punch points, as Andreas asked for. That would be where I would start. Over.
Andreas.
Okay, I was going to suggest that this go to the list for further refining that punch list. But go ahead, Andrea.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Over.
So moving on to the voting queue. Received steering committee vacancy election, secret ballot, and in the queue, so that's going to go March 5th to 18th discussion and voting starting the 19th. And in the queue is coordinated campaign committee election, and it starts voting on the 5th of March. Old business, which is, I guess, another week. Review of pending agenda items, updates as available. I'm not sure what... Okay, I'm sorry, that's the heading. Staff computer purchase protocol. Hillary?
Yes. So we have a draft that we don't necessarily need to discuss tonight. There's been some commentary already, and FinCom will be working on it, but we at least have now a draft. We also have a draft moving it on the agenda of travel, like updates to the travel reimbursement policy, and that might be it. But hopefully they will be finalized and ready for approval by this body for the next call.
Thank you.
Progress is being made.
Next, steering committee strategic planning virtual retreat, 24th and 5th of March. Gloria, Daryl?
Yeah. Gloria, you want to start? You want me to jump
no,
in?
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So we had a chance. Gloria, Mike, and myself have all had an opportunity to have some conversation about the framework for this. And so one of the suggestions that we have been bantering about and wanted to throw out to you all is to sort of break the 2 days up. And the first part of the first day would be hopefully if Mike, Hillary, Gloria are available and David, we would have some FaceTime here with the two staff that are local and Skype all the rest of you guys in and the other staff in. If Darlene's able to come down, that would be awesome as well. But if not, it's okay. Then that first day, some of us might be face-to-face with everyone else chiming in, spend part of the time on the first day talking with staff about sort of trying to reset our relationship with staff and what we're trying to build as a party and their role in that. And so using that as an opportunity to talk about some of the realignment of what needs to happen, but getting some of their perspective on that. Mike was particularly interested in us framing that for them, so it's not just an open free-for-all, but to frame that a little bit with at least some perspective that we're coming at this with so that they can also offer us some of their thoughts as well as the things that they feel impassioned or I'm passionate about or feel that they have good skills at doing so we can sort of divide out those responsibilities with some input. Not that we would necessarily have to agree to exactly what's being said. We just want to hear from them and give them the opportunity to share with us what their thoughts are individually, but as a staff. And then after that, we would go to working. And so we thought that a framework that we could use for our conversation around the city, what we need to do as a party, would be one, finishing that realignment and how we're going to divvy out what needs to happen amongst the existing staff and any of us and our volunteers, but then also looking at the previously created strategic plan and doing some review of that. We would start doing that now before we meet. But when we get to meeting together, we would look at what was there. Did we accomplish it? Did we need to? If we did, great, check it off. If we didn't, is it something that we still need to be focused on? If it is, great, let's revisit it and figure out what we need to say about it now. If it isn't, we just cross it off and move on. But then we create sort of a working strategic plan that we're going to work from, just using the other one as a framework. So there may be some areas that some of us feel are missing from that previous one, and that would be a place to put in the things that we felt that the strategic plan previously didn't cover that should have. So we've been doing some reviewing of it. We'll invite everyone to do that, to sort of look and see what they have. So by the end of the second day, we walk out with a working document of what we sort of come to agreement on what are our strategic plans, at least for the next 18 months, so that we can put something in place and start getting people moving so we can go, you know, get to growing the party and rebuilding as we need to. So that's the framework of the idea. We wanted to get some feedback. Mike, Gloria might want to add in to something on that if I missed something, and see if there's any particular objection to the framework, at least the procedure that we're looking at sending out to you guys as a plan. Over.
Darlene Sack.
Gloria, and then Darlene.
Yeah, I think Daryl, you know, kind of summed it up fairly well. I'm just going to mention, when we talked earlier in the week, it didn't click for me, so I had just had another Green Party call. I think people traveling to Washington, D.C. on March 24th is not going to be an easy or a good idea. It's now the March for Our Lives, which is the high school students against gun control, for gun control again. And, you know, I think that just can be problematic for those of us who are trying to come in, especially if it's during that day. I don't know, coming in later on, late the day before. I just think logistically that can be a bit of a challenge for more in-person traveling. But I could be wrong. I just know it was really, really hard for Occupy Inauguration to do that.
Okay. Yeah, direct response to that real quick.
Go ahead.
Yeah, if folks do come in, I'm happy to pick people up and navigate you through the city. More than likely, I can get most of you, or at least make more than one trip, but if it's necessary. Over.
Did you include steering committee involvement in state party issues, which was mentioned on the agenda?
No, not in that conversation. That's something different.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Darlene?
Darlene's on stage.
So I know that some of you on this call right now were not at the last retreat that we had in Philadelphia, but I'm concerned about all the energy that was spent at the retreat. And it was a good retreat, mind you. I thought that we were connecting well, we were synergizing and so forth. But no end product came out of that retreat, and in fact, we were very challenged to drudge up the notes and all the decisions that were made at that retreat. So I would be really concerned that this retreat would be like number two of that. I'd really like to see a way that we agree upon as far as how to formally document what took place and the decisions that were made, and that we all have access to that. Over.
Direct response.
Go ahead.
Or Daryl Stack, it doesn't matter. So, yes, Darlene, great point. One of the things that our plan is that we are going to leave out with a working document that we are going to agree on, and this is our strategic direction for the next 18 months or a year or however long we decide it once we have the conversation about what needs to be there. So we are definitely going to leave with decisions and with something in hand and probably even assignments that each of us are willing to be a part of to make that happen. And then the direction to how we're going to relate to our committees and caucuses and to the states and all of that. And then what staff's going to be doing. We will have made those decisions potentially. If we haven't done some of that beforehand, we'll do that, and all that will come up as a part of that plan. So the rest of what you're asking for and how we document and all that, I think we're going to have to assign to someone to write down, with the secretary, what are the decisions that were made, and maybe doing it in a and Michael's same Google Sheet, so that it's there, it's shared with everybody, and it's going to be there, and everyone can see it and access it and participate in it as well. So that might be a way to do it, and Mike, when he's feeling better, might have some other ideas around how we can communicate online while we're all together or while we're in this virtual retreat, where we can see what other each other's thoughts and comments are along the way. There may be some way to do that, but I am less tech-savvy than he. Over.
Any other questions or comments?
So, Daryl, say.
Go ahead.
So is there any particular objection to that framework? Or would you like us to revisit something and come back again with more ideas online? Or is that framework generally okay for folks and we can tweak it as we go along between now and then? So I guess I should say by consensus, is that framework acceptable as a place to start for this virtual retreat?
Well, the only Andrea talk.
Go ahead, Andrea.
I'm very sensitive about how we bring staff into this conversation, given the current situation. So that piece needs to be kind of fluid, in my opinion. Over.
Can you, Daryl, say?
Go ahead.
I agree with you. Can you say a little bit more about what, when you say fluid, what you would want to see that would make it feel comfortable for you?
Oh, it's not. It's not that I'm feeling uncomfortable. It's that we don't know who's going to be around given the turmoil, right? And so, you know, there's already all this discussion happening on the National Committee listserv and, of course, all these emails that are happening on the back end and whatever else. So, I don't know how appropriate it is to completely earmark a spot in the agenda or whatever, geared towards staff, because we don't know what that's going to look like. We could have different positions and, you know, people doing different tasks and that sort of thing. So I think, whatever. I would rather just not make that a real hard and fast portion of the agenda because we don't know what's going on. Over.
Yeah, Daryl Stack.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the reason for inviting them and letting them know that we want them to be there or that we're requiring them to be there, whatever it is whoever is on staff will be a part of that discussion, and whoever is on staff will be how we're dividing out what happens. And so hearing from them, I think my energy right now is really about helping, making sure that our existing staff know that as of right now, we haven't decided to let anyone go, and that they're valued and that their opinions and their thoughts about how we move strategically as a party is important because they're one facet of the party's work. So they're the staff. And so for me, it's a way of sort of resetting that that bar to say, we do want you involved. We do value what you have to say. We do want to hear from you. And we do want you to be a part of this moving forward and how we move forward. And if somebody quits or somebody, you know, gets fired between now and then, which is may or may not happen, then we'll go with whoever is there. But that's kind of my thoughts about it, but I'm open and it's not a blocking thing for me. I just want to find a way to engage them in a different way and not with the level of hostility that they seem to feel being thrown at them and that they may be throwing back, right? So how can we sort of stop doing that and say, hey, we're one Green Party and you're a part of it. We want to hear from you. We want you to be a part of this as we make these decisions. We want you to be involved in it. So we might be able to do it differently than what was suggested, but that's the hope or the energy behind wanting to do something with them specifically involved and not the whole weekend. Over.
Darlene?
I think that Andrea's right in regards to the level of sensitivity that needs to be taken with the staff. And what I can equate to this, or what I'm thinking of a little bit, is when we invited both Jill Stein and Margaret Flowers to the retreat, right? There were concerns about, how we were going to do that, the level of engagement, what was going to be discussed, what was going to be addressed. And I saw it more as a hearing session, you know, like allow them to come and address us and let us know how they're feeling and what their concerns are and what their issues are, and that we can get, maybe we can ask some key questions. But I really don't, would not like to see like this hot debate going on back and forth. And I think that if you don't establish parameters, this is what's going to happen. We're going to set ourselves up. Over.
Yeah, I think I mentioned that Mike, that was one of Mike's points also, that he did want to make sure we frame the parameters for whatever's going to happen with them. But we also have to frame the parameters for ourselves as well to some degree so we can get something done by the end of the 2 days. So, yeah, I think you're right. The question, I guess, really is, do we include them and in what way? And I guess we can tweak that more. The question for now is, are we okay with at least planning to have something that includes them? What that looks like, we may need to tweak given some of the concerns that Andrea and others are, and you are saying right now. I'm just doing the talking. Mike and Gloria are in this too, so they can jump in anywhere they want.
So I guess the question stands, is there consensus with that caveat to keep the structure as it was presented? And it will be tweaked with more guidelines as it approaches. Any concerns? Standing? Okay.
No.
It sounds like we do have consensus, Daryl, with the caveat that that's frame for that time slot be tweaked.
Absolutely.
There's mention under the strategic planning for including guidelines for involvement in state party issues from the February 11th minutes.
That's a Gloria.
Gloria?
Thing, I think.
Oh, no, I think that I raised this on a previous call, and everyone thought it should be discussed as a topic or during the retreat, in terms of just thinking about our roles and other kinds of things. I don't think there's anything to say about it now unless people want to revisit it.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so moving
on. But I do, I mean, I'm sorry, Charles, but I was kind of looking at something in terms of, I just want to step back, you know, around the logistics. I appreciate Gary saying that, but I mean, the other thing to think about is when we come down in person, then we have to travel back, or do you expect us to be staying the whole weekend there? Because these are different conversations that have to happen. They don't have to happen on this call, but it's nearly March, right? So traveling back to D.C., the night, you know, when, so that we're then on day two on a call or a Google Hangout, or is the expectation that those of us coming in person should stay two nights? And so I appreciate you saying in person kind of works, but it really doesn't work, or we would have been doing it in a different way. So I think we have to think a little bit more about this.
Hillary Staff.
Go ahead, Hillary.
So I generally think in person is so much better than pretty much anything else. And I appreciate the fact that many of us are on the East Coast, and that makes it very possible. But I'm also cognizant of the fact that it will kind of create dynamics for people who are not able to be with us in person. And I don't want there to be weird, I don't know. I mean, I just feel like there could be a lot of sidebar conversations and just different dynamics for the people who are in the hinterlands virtually versus those of us that are in person. So I'm just sort of raising that.
Oh, me and Blankenhorn are going to be talking smack on chat. I'm kidding.
There's also Joey. No, I mean more like that, you know, more the other way around, that like we're going to have sidebars in person that you guys aren't privy to, and I just don't want it to be weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is going to be weird. I mean, we're talking about three people, you know, to fly to wherever. And we don't, you know, we don't really have the money for it, but it's like,
yeah,
you know, what are you going to do? I mean, I guess we can make quote-unquote gentle people agreements. So, over.
Yeah, there, I'll say.
Go ahead.
I think that's a great point, and I think we had sidebars when we were present. We're all there together, but I think that if we can, we have a limited amount of time together, and being on the computer and the phone and video long distance is just difficult for two long days anyway, that, you know, if there were people that were physically present, that we just keep reminding ourselves, reminding whoever that is, to, you know, not to have a sidebar, or someone brings whatever's being said out so that people who weren't there could hear it and participate in it if necessary. And therefore, if you don't want anyone to hear what you're talking about, then don't have the sidebar conversation. No, I'm just teasing. But, yeah, I agree that there's a problem, but I think we hopefully could figure out a way to mitigate that, since we're thinking about it in advance versus it just happening and we hadn't thought about it. And the suggestion about us being together was really just a suggestion. I'm not married to it. I just think it would help to some degree, some of us being here together and some of us being in the room with the staff and, you know, just trying to ease some of the uncomfortableness, because it's all uncomfortable for all of us. You know, letting people go or reducing salaries or having to deal with money issues and all that stuff is just uncomfortable and in general. So that's really, you know, but again, whatever makes us be most efficient is what I'm most interested in making sure that we do.
Gloria Stack.
Darlene Stack.
So I've got Gloria, somebody, and Darlene.
Mike.
Yes.
Okay, Mike and then Darlene. So Gloria?
No, Andrea.
I completely agree about in person. I think we all, you know, agree to that is so much better and productive and comradely. And I think we all mourn the fact that we can't afford to do it, but it's just not appropriate to spend that kind of money, right? I mean, we can decide we're going to change that and that people can think about that, right? But, you know, I think, you know, I appreciate the suggestion. I saw two things. One is I really don't think you're addressing the fact that what it means to have now all of a sudden in person for some of us who, when we talked about this months ago, you know, you know, some people are located there. So we now have families and jobs and other things that we did not think we were leaving for two nights or traveling back late Saturday night so that we can get on a Google Hangout to do the rest of Sunday. So that's we don't have to talk about it on this call, but I'm raising that issue that is, is the suggestion we come down for an entire weekend? Or is the suggestion we do it one day because that's the day the staff can be there, and, you know, what that really means, you know, leaving out people who can't travel and putting, I think, an extra burden in some ways on people traveling if it's not a real tight plan. And then the second thing is if we're concerned about how staff is feeling right now, I mean, and I hear Andrea's point about we don't even know what staff kind of configuration we're going to have. Somebody can just say, hey, we're done, you know, on March 1st, then we should be having a special call with the staff to, you know, put some boundaries on it and time limits, because it could go on for 5 hours, I'm sure. But to basically just say, we want to reassure you, or we want to answer some questions, or some other way of communicating with them sooner, since things are going to be enacted about their positions in the next few days, not, you know, 3-4 weeks from now, which we can also discuss online. I'm not asking people to discuss it now. I'm just raising that as other alternatives. Just because I feel like there's, you know, although everything is a suggestion, we are now talking about it like it's happening. So,
Mike?
Yeah, so I'm pretty agnostic on whether we try to get together in person or it all happens online. But I do think if some of us are getting together in person, that it actually makes more sense to consider that place being Philadelphia. That is easier for Gloria and I to get to. That would be about the same distance for Daryl to travel up to Philadelphia than it would for, you know, Gloria and I to come down from New York. And if, you know, we're really trying to get as many people there as possible, and we're trying to also make it more feasible for Darlene to come, then that would make sense for it to be in New York. And I think that if we're going in person, that it's preferable that as many steering committee members are there in person as possible, and that, you know, having one or two staff there is not the primary consideration. Over.
Darlene?
My preference is that we all meet together. I think that a lot of things are going to get lost in translation if we're not doing it in person. I really think, again, that there were some positives that came out of the Philadelphia retreat, and I'd like to see us imitate that again or mimic that energy again. And yes, Mike, you're right. New York would be much more preferable for me. What I wanted to ask the group is, though, did any of us entertain getting some sponsors or donations just for this event? I mean, for us to meet together. And the reason, and perhaps to try to get Andrea and Chris in, the reason why I'm saying it is because when we did the diversity training in Philadelphia, there was only a $2,000 budget, and we were able to do so much with that $2,000 because we were very creative as far as host housing, the training team that we used or the training model that we used, and people were kind of chipping in where they could. I know that it's in March and it's a month away, but I'm wondering if, as a team, we try to, you know, and I know that it's hard for me because of my own position, but if we can somehow work on getting each one of us getting someone that we know to donate $200 to get us together as a team. I just think that it's very valuable to do that, and some of the issues that we're dealing with right now are kind of like crisis issues, and they really need to be dealt with efficiently and the best way possible.
Andrea? Go ahead, Andrea.
Yeah, just want to clarify that whichever employee we have at this point, we're only going to be half-time. So it probably doesn't. It probably makes sense for us to really figure out a truncated way for them to participate. They don't even have to be at this retreat. They're the only staff people, presuming that everyone is still around at that point, that would be Cynthia and Scott, right? So, you know, and maybe
and David.
Yeah, maybe. You know, and there would be costs associated with putting David up, you know, so he's got quite a bit of travel. I think even, if I'm not mistaken, even more than Gloria does, that sort of thing. So there's expense involved, and we're not at full disposal of full-time employees anymore at that point. Over.
Yeah, Daryl's back.
Mike's back.
Daryl, then Mike.
Yeah, I don't want to beat this up right now. It was really just an idea. There was really no intention of ever expecting people to stay over. Gloria brings up a good point. If that also involves travel, being able to get back in time to do it. Philly is easy for me. It's close. New York is not so close with my 16-year-old. But other than that, I could do Philly as well as D.C. New York's a little harder to do for me, just for the record. But however you want to do it, it's fine. And if we do in-person, some in-person, not, I'm, again, not married to it, just really a suggestion of, and how we make that happen. I guess we could, if we decide we want to do any of that, then we can sort of figure out how to do that if we decide we want to do it. Over.
Mike?
I pass.
I just want to request that this move to the list because it sounds like there's a bit of hashing out a number of details and probably more than we could accomplish on the call. Is that agreeable?
Yep.
let's move on to the election phase 2 and 3, election database. Hillary?
I have nothing new to report on that.
Any other comment? Okay, so moving on to voting page maintenance. Chris is not on the call. Does anybody have insight?
Nope.
Okay, so we'll move on to the ETC final report. Daryl?
So I am extremely frustrated. I have asked for weeks and 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 weeks to get that. The most recent conversation I had with the body of folks in the series of emails had to do with some folks that were on the committee that stopped doing whatever their work were, and they've sort of disappeared. They haven't identified who those people are. So what I asked for, and I did not check email today to see if it came, and if it did, I will send it to you for Jody to update the minutes. But I said that they need to then give me at least some sort of preliminary report to give to you all, a final draft of something, or give some statement as to explaining why it's 9 months or almost 9 months since the last election where these concerns were raised, that they have not given that final report. So that they need to answer to something and say something, because other people are beginning to ask the question. And on various calls and various committees that I've been on, that question is cropping up, especially now that there's a special election going on. And people are concerned about the abnormalities, if there were any. And what, unfortunately, there may not have been very many, but they were explainable or dealt with, but we don't have a report. And so I'm at my wit's end in terms of, if they live near me, I could go knock on the door and say, I'm not leaving till you give me something. But since they don't, it is, I think at some point people are going to hear this call, the minutes will go out, and the ETC is simply derelict in completing its report. And the NC may need to take that up in terms of how we address that. But I have no answer as to how to address it other than continue to ask them to give me something. I don't know, I came on the call late, if there's someone from the ETC that's on the call. I did ask them to reach out to Jody to get on the call so they could explain to you all directly themselves what that would be. And I think one or two of them said they could probably be on the call, but I'm not sure if we have any observers on the call from the ETC. And if so, now would be a time to say something.
This is Charles facilitating, but I'm also on the ETC and had said I would report and answer questions. Just to give some background, we know that the ETC is derelict, essentially, in getting this final part out. A couple of members have not been engaged for personal reasons and health reasons. The one person that had been sort of giving initiative for each part had run into serious health problems and has still been involved, but has not been able to lead the way he had. We don't have any official co-chairs. I've put out a call for scheduling a meeting, a phone call this week, and so probably the next 2 days after this call, look back at the vote. But in the next couple of days, it looks likely we'll have our phone call to try and pull together this last part. As you mentioned, there are some irregularities that were reported, and I don't remember if they were specifically mentioned in the earlier reports, but they did not affect the results from those reports. And part of the final part was to give a good summary of them, as well as to recommendations for the bylaws and for the software to overcome any future issues. So I understand and all of us, I think, understand the impatience, but I can only speak for myself without having a conversation with other members.
Andrea's back.
Go ahead, Andrea.
So I appreciate that information. It should not be unknown to the folks in this conversation right now that the fact that this has taken so long has created a pretty good political morass for someone like me, right? You know, not to recap all of the dog pile on my candidacy, but there were accusations that were made that this entire election was illegitimate, and the fact that this committee has not produced a report continues to kind of stoke those fires, right? Now we have people running for the vacant spot on the SE who continue to talk about this stuff. So this is, again, a campaign issue. It's divisive that we don't have finality. And I don't mean to pile on you personally, Charles. I've always found you to be extremely conscientious and extremely helpful, right? You always have the good of the party at heart, and you're working with other people. But this is really, really political, right? And so I want to have you reiterate for the record, and Jody, when you listen to these minutes, please make sure you include this into the minutes. The irregularities that you talk about have to do with what sort of thing?
There are a list of about a dozen reports that we received from members who had voted or tried to vote. A couple of them had not received the confirmation email, but our check of the mirror showed that confirmation email went out. One of those, it went to an old address because it was in the system, a previous email address. The other one, I don't know if that was the case also, but it was emailed. A couple of them, there's like several pairs of similar issues. One voted past the deadline and tried to vote past the deadline and, you know, included in the report the time that they voted, and so that was clear why they weren't able to vote. A couple had issues accessing Wi-Fi, which was at the site, and we know that Wi-Fi was generally available, and so the specific issues of getting through were not a problem. We also had a couple of reports that people were able to check updates of the voting progress or access the voting page repeatedly. So we know, and also from the logs, we know that the site was available, so that wasn't an issue with being able to access the actual voting page with login credentials. And I think a couple of people had trouble logging in, and I don't remember the specifics of that, but I think that was more having their login name and password, and they did actually cast a vote for that state. I think it was two people from the same state delegate seat, and the alternate was able to vote finally. That's all I can say off. Off of my memory.
So, direct response. So, has the committee detected any kind of vote tampering?
No.
Has the committee detected any intentional, willful duplication of vote?
No.
Okay. Has the committee, is the committee reasonably certain that the system counted the votes, any votes that were actually recorded, that the system counted the votes properly?
Yes, and that was in our previous report that we
right.
looked at the actual votes that were reported on the emails, compared them to the voting page results, and reran the result through the vote counting software to make sure the result was the same.
Okay. Okay, so really what it sounds like, folks were
Gloria Stack. Although I agree with the principle of what about this, I do have to say, like, this is basically, you know, an interview by one steering committee member of one member of the ETC. And
right. I appreciate that.
So I don't think we agreed on that happening right now on this call.
Well, but these are my
and
questions.
And I love it, even though the principle, I understand why it needs to happen, and it should have happened long ago.
I don't quite understand the objection to my questions, which are material. This is not intended to be an official word.
The objection is the time on the agenda. This is not on the agenda.
Okay.
It's getting on the recording. One steering committee member interviewing one member of a committee who somehow cannot make a report. And I think that should be noted for people to know about. But then I think it's putting Charles in a position of reporting what they didn't report.
That in mind, I just want to say that we are working on getting the report out shortly. And it might be 2 weeks before it's completed, but we will get it as quickly as we can.
Okay. Yeah, so I was going to wrap up anyway. You know, this isn't intended to be an official report, but there are questions extant out there that are going to be
put on the recording. But it's on the recording, and that is different. And I'm sorry, I couldn't get my phone off mute. I'm sorry to have made it continue.
I'd like to finish if you don't mind. So this is simply a way to let people – please, Gloria, I'd like to finish. I swear I'm getting off this topic. But I just want to make sure that people who are listening to this recording understand that the steering committee is very interested in this and wants to finalize this. So this at least is sort of like a preliminary final. Thank you. Over.
I disagree.
Okay, I want to open up for...
with that statement being made.
It's just my personal statement. I'm not asking
SC
to invade.
You can say that. You can say it's your personal statement.
But that's what I am saying. But that's what I am saying. I'm not asking you all to endorse any of my questions. I'm not representing this as the voice of the SC. These are my questions. Over.
I'd like to open up for any other comments or questions before we go on. Okay. And with that, we are past the public session part of the conference call. There's an executive session, so observers should drop from the call and the recording should end.
Great. Thank you, Charles, for facilitating.
Sure.
Thanks, Charles.
It is 9:44 p.m.
Good night, Tama.
Good night, all.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you, Charles.
Sure.
Good night. Bye.
All right. Normally, I'm the one who's on the – hold on, let me un-record.